Welcome to the Dog Trainers Podcast,
a podcast created by dog trainers for dog trainers or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back, and thank you so much for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast. Mariano Alvarez here with Brent Labrada, and we're super excited to be back with you guys. This is Season 3, Episode 3. We have a very special topic today, something that we've discussed in a seminar event that we did with Michael Ellis, and we want to dive right into it. We're excited. So with that, over to you, Brent.
What's up, guys? Yes, today's episode is called Master Your Material. Now, Master Your Material was the name of one of the sections of our seminar with Michael Ellis, and it was actually one of the most dense things that we actually couldn't really cover it as deeply as we'd wanted to, because Master Your Material could be its own 4 to 5 day seminar, if you ask me, right? And so maybe that'll happen at one time in the future. But ultimately, what Master Your Material is really about is before we can teach and be effective educators, it's really, really important we understand the material in depth, right? And I think it's like, we live in a world where you can learn things off the internet, where you can, you know, learn something, pay for an online course, and then immediately you go and charge your clients for what you just learned in that online course. In essence, you know, they're paying for it. You can learn something on Instagram and say it like you made that thing up, right? And mind you, this has happened before. People used to read books and kind of steal ideas and then rebrand those ideas as their own. But the reality of it is when we're teaching dog owners and pets that need our help, it's really, really important that if they're paying, that they're dealing with someone who actually knows what they're doing, right? So just kind of a different example, like, would you guys take financial advice from someone who doesn't have good finances, right? Would you take fitness advice from someone who is not fit, right? Would you take marriage advice from someone who's not happily married, right? You might, but wouldn't you rather have someone who has tried and true, proven results in the things that they're actually doing? And because then you'd be able to have faith that they actually know what they're talking about. So this episode is called Mastering Your Material. How do we become dog trainers that have mastered their material and that are worth their weight in salt?
100%. And when we start talking about a topic like mastering material, the very beginnings of this topic have to start with the ethology behind it. Meaning, as dog trainers who charge people, like, forget the money that you charge people, who can give people a sense of hope to improve the situation that they have with their dog, it becomes our obligation to make sure that the things that we're teaching, we are well practiced in and we know the ins and outs of, because people are counting on us to do that, right? And that's a best practices thing. Like when we talked to our attorney friend for that episode, you know, Paul Slattery, if you go to a mechanic, it's not often that you're like, I want to know where you went to school and I want to see this and that. You want to be able to go to a place like this and have a reasonable expectation that these guys know what they're doing. I don't have to like vet this out for myself. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously do vet out your trainer, but you get the point I'm making here, right?
Yep.
So the first idea I think to start with is, it's not ethical to charge people money for something that you're not good at yourself, that you haven't been able to replicate with good result over and over and over again. And we'll talk a little later about what these results may look like, right? But until you're good at a new concept, because obviously you've got to learn somewhere somehow, something I really wanted to bring up, and I'm quite passionate about this, and shout out to a friend, John Gatta, he's really passionate about this too, talks about this a lot, is the ways of practicing things that you're newer at in an ethical way. So here's one that I like to do, okay? So my new assistant trainer, Emily, I bring in return dogs, clients that we've trained, you know, with tried and true method, the dogs all turn out great. I ask the owners, and they always are happy to say yes, because I offer them like, you know, a few free weeks of boarding and training. Mm. And I tell them exactly why. I've got a new assistant. Her name is Emily. Oh yeah, you guys did meet her last time you were born. Like, whatever, right? We'll have a nice little conversation about it. So in any case, I'm teaching her a new concept, right? This dog's already good at it, but I want her to learn it. Would you be okay if I borrowed him for a few weeks and just work on him? It won't cost you anything and XYZ. Mm-hmm. And they are always like, sure, take him. Mm-hmm. He loves being there, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, of course, the version of this that our friend John Gatta loves, go to rescues. There's so many dogs out there that could just benefit from a walk. Any dog trainer here that's ever been to a shelter or a rescue have heard the same depressing things and seen the same depressing things. It smells like piss. All these dogs are going nuts, barking, going crazy. And a little bit of walking or tugging or, you know, something with these dogs could make such a difference in their life. It's ridiculous, yeah, right?
Indeed.
And I, being practical, I get that there's like a duality there of like, you know, I get it, Mariano, but I'm like, I'm also not Mother Teresa and I have to work and make money and, you know, and I understand all that. But even if you wanted to look at it from a professional's perspective, like I've got to work and put food on my table. If you're going to practice something new, don't do it with a paying customer. That's all I'm saying, right? There's plenty of things out there that you can do to practice new concepts. And the things that you're good at and are experienced in and confident in, only then should you be considering teaching those things.
Yeah.
Right. So that's part of the ethology of it.
Yeah. And I would say, and here's the thing from a business mindset. If I have a client who has a need, right? Like I need someone to watch my dog for boarding, right? They can pay you for boarding, you know? Mm-hmm. And then practice training on that dog. Can you mind if me or my assistants work on training this dog just for practice reasons, you know? They'd be like, of course, more activity, more excited. They're like, for them, you're adding so much value and you're serving a need, which means you don't have to work for free, right? So that's one way that you can still ethically, like, I'm practicing, but I'm not charging professional dog training prices, because guess what happens? As professional dog trainers, we have to raise our prices so that we can separate ourselves from the prices that lower level dog trainers are charging. And then we're charging ridiculous amounts per hour because of that, right? So it's silly.
Yeah, yeah. And this is something that I just thought of right now. Like, have you ever done that thing, Brent, where it's like, I want to get my teeth cleaned and this dentist charges, I don't know, $150 or whatever. Yeah. But the dental students at ASU charge like $75, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to be very aware of the fact, and or like sign a piece of paper or something that says like, these are students, right?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a way to do something like that, right? Just as an idea, like, hey, look, you know, my trainer Emily's going to take lead on this dog, and there's a lower price point to reflect that, and you know, and so on, right? Like all different kinds of ways to do things, right? But the point stands is if you're going to be charging like normal rates for things, make sure that they're things that you can confidently produce results in.
Yes, 100%. And again, guys, going back, people are growing up in a generation now where they don't have to follow the traditional model of dog training, right? Dog training used to be a master and apprentice relationship, which means you had someone you worked with or worked for, and you studied under them and you worked under them, and they shaped you and molded you and guided you and protected you from making silly mistakes. And like, you would get better faster with mentorship, and that was the old model. But nowadays, not gonna lie, people get more knowledgeable faster because of all the things that are available to them. They can buy so much, read so much, listen to so much, that their brain knows way more than they can physically practice, right, at any mm-hmm. given time. So we're still limited by the 24 hours in a day, the 7 days in a week, you know, we're still limited by the restraints of time. And so later in this episode, we're going to go over like what maybe some of the best ways to practice and condition yourself so that you can master material better.
100%. And just before we do, some really simple points to make that I'm sure all of us as dog trainers have noticed. You know, or if owners listen to this episode and you've worked with like lots of owners have like worked with this dog trainer and then worked with that dog trainer and had better results with that dog trainer, right? Mm-hmm. Happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Something I know all of you have noticed is the better you get at something, the more experienced you get at it, the easier it becomes to explain, the less procedural it feels to say mm-hmm. to people, mm-hmm. right? And you've either noticed this personally or you've gotten simpler at explaining things, or you've noticed this just firsthand, like, yeah, well, you know, I went to this seminar and listening to this dog trainer who's been training for like 40 years, he just made everything sound so digestible and like accessible. And it was mm-hmm. easy, you know, and I know everything he said, but just the way he said it was like amazing. I can see why this guy's so popular and, you know, and so on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like that, those come with time. Right. So all of that kind of encompasses why it's important to make sure that you spend time to master your material. But the next big issue then becomes, how do I do that? Right. So we want to talk about some really cool ways of understanding the different types and methods of understanding things and how you go about blending those into real world accessibility of skills. Right.
Yep. So when we're blending theory with application, you guys have to remember the goal of the learning practice, like researching and reading books and watching videos, like the research has a goal. And the goal is to understand concepts well enough that you can intentionally make moves, right? Like me personally, like I know about chess, but if you were to tell me what moves could this piece make on the board, I haven't memorized them. I really don't. So I don't play chess because of that, because I can't intentionally control the board because I don't know enough about chess, right? And then the goal for fluency, or the goal for physical practice, is the creation of fluency, where I don't have to think, I just react. But I'm reacting now with intention, right? And understanding. I know I can predict what is about to happen when I do X, Y, or Z, right? And that's where the understanding leads to intentional work that we do, right? So these two things are married together, and we have to work really, really hard to make sure we have both.
100%. And I think that a really simple, like common, easy pitfall to fall into, it applies just as much to like kind of DIY trainers who have just kind of picked up one day, started a social media account, and just started training dogs based on other like social media people that they've learned through YouTube or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm not necessarily saying that as a negative. But we all know like, you know, this type of person. And then there's the other type of person who kind of works in a kennel, you know, just kind of trains the dogs that are handed to them by people who like make sales and XYZ, right? Mm-hmm. And this isn't a character like argument. I'm not saying one's better or worse. What I'm saying is they each tend to have two or the same problem, but the two halves of the same problem. So the trainer who's kind of exposed to everything online, they're very learned in the different like videos, and they you can watch all these videos and they like have heard of all these concepts, but haven't necessarily had time to practice all these concepts. Mm-hmm. And definitely haven't practiced them enough to be confident in them, mm-hmm. right? And then the person who works at the kennel who just kind of is fed dogs, they're super practiced in what they practice, mm-hmm. but maybe don't get that much opportunity because they're so busy just working dogs all the time, mm-hmm. learning new concepts, right? And there's got to be a middle ground there. Like you should spend time and learn and kind of see what's out there and so on. But once you've done that, put your head down, focus, and practice what you've learned before moving on to the next thing, right? So I just wanted to make sure that that was kind of delineated.
Yes. And here we go back to the traditional model of training. You need to have some form of someone to review your work. Like there needs to be someone to review, even if it's you reviewing your own work, right? Even if you record yourself so that you can pick apart what you're doing wrong, what you're doing different, and that way you can compare and contrast to people who you know do it really, really well, right? And then the other one, or you have a mentor who goes, hey, can you watch my work? Like no joke, guys, the last 6 months ago during our Art of Teaching seminar, Michael Ellis was at our house, and he invites a friend over, and he goes, oh, my buddy Joey's coming over. And I go, who's Joey? And he goes, oh, Joey Sinante, he's a world-class dog trainer. He's amazing. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. And he's like, yeah, he lives 10 minutes down the street. So I get hooked up with this guy, Joey Sinante, and every week to every other week, I'm going to have him watch my work, right? So as I'm training, he's either teaching me something, he's supervising me, and it's so cool to be back in student mode. Like I'm 16 years in the game, he's 26 years in the game, you know what I mean? And to have someone like just kind of say, yeah, you're doing that good, but change this little thing. Like I feel so good because I can feel myself getting better. I can feel my dogs getting better. I can feel everything getting better. So always make sure that you have someone reviewing, or at least you're reviewing your own work.
100%. And that brings up a really cool thing about Michael Ellis, just since you brought him up. Mm-hmm. That I know this is going to be one of those things that like somebody says it, and then everybody listening is like, well, no shit. But, mm-hmm. you know, but just hear me out. So in my experience with like with anything people can get good at, whatever, boxing, jiu-jitsu, anything at all, they tend to kind of go one of two ways with it in terms of their like personality or their like ego with it. Mm-hmm. They either get so good at it that they're perfectly comfortable when somebody tells them they did something wrong. So it's like, oh, sorry, let me fix that. Mm-hmm. Or they get nervous about not being good at it now that they're expecting to be super good at it. And when they when somebody points something out that could be better, they like really take it to heart. Mm. And it's easy to do the second one, mm-hmm. really easy, right? But I've noticed that really, really high level people like love to be shown what they do that's wrong or could be better.
Mm-hmm. They love to be coached.
They love to be coached, right? And mm-hmm. and they've learned, like, arguably, it's really just one lesson. Like, yep. don't stress about it. Just get better, right? Like, you know, as in, let them teach you whatever it was, and don't feel like embarrassed or whatever the case. You know, and I brought up Michael Ellis because he just has such this easygoing attitude to things, and he always wants to learn new things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I find it impressive in that way because, you know, I can imagine that there's got to be dog trainers out there who would do the other thing of like, no, my system is the system and it's the best one, and it's you know, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and it, that's the kind of thing that, like, again, I know I say it and it's easy to say, but just I would have you guys try your best, like, and I'm trying my best too. I'm not pretending to be perfect at it, but try your best to be the first person, the one who's like, oh yeah, cool, let me take on this new skill and work on it. It doesn't matter that I wasn't like super good at it before. It is what it is, right? Like, we're mm-hmm. always learning.
Yep, definitely. Hey, let's take a quick little commercial break real fast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Dog Trainers Podcast. You know what's a great way to support this podcast? By becoming a sponsor today. With sponsoring the podcast, you'd be helping us make this show the best it can be, and so much more. From hosting more local events, traveling throughout the country, and connecting with trainers from around the world, ultimately getting you, the listener, more of the content that you love. For more information, please contact us at dogtrainerspodcast@gmail.com or visit our Instagram page at dogtrainerspodcast. Thank you, guys, and now back to the show.
All right, guys, again, thank you so much for listening. This is season 3, episode 3. We're talking about mastering your material, the ethos behind it, some of the major pitfalls or ways to look at how you go about doing it. So now we wanted to kind of wrap this up with a bit of a more practical approach. Like, what are just some simple tips, some simple lessons that Brent and I have learned over the years mm-hmm. on day-to-day? How can you go about doing this and avoiding some of the mistakes that we've made? So let's start with a big one. It's important to seek out mentorship, mm-hmm. right? Brent and I both have different, I guess you could say, kind of histories in dog training, but both of us have learned the value of finding people who know more and learning to listen and pay mm-hmm. attention. Mm-hmm. And it's not always super directly related to just dog training. Like, we both have mentors that are dog trainers, obviously, that mm-hmm. have taught us things outside of dog training, you could argue, but that make you a better dog trainer. Things mm-hmm. like making time for yourself and your family. Things like setting reasonable work hours where you're not on the work phone so you don't burn out. Like, you know, and all of that directly correlates to better performance when you're on the field, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And mentorship, even to this day, we get emails about it. It's the kind of thing that intimidates people. People get really nervous about asking someone for their time and their expertise. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's worthwhile to just cover a few simple ways that you can go about doing that.
Yep.
And again, the first one I'm going to say here, it's one of those things that, like, I know people just say, but I found it to be super true because me personally, I'm like a nervy person in general. And I don't know if it's the fear of rejection or whatever, but I know that holds a lot of people back when wanting to reach out to people. But I don't know what the shift was, but I really did do the thing, you know, and I want you guys to just kind of learn that of, like, the worst they can say is no, just reach out, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll email somebody, or, you know, if I have the way to communicate with them directly, I'll call them or something and just, hey, you don't know me. My name is Mariano. I'd love to learn from you, and, you know, and so on. And I'll tell you guys, like, straight up, I haven't had anybody say no yet. It's and true. if they do, it's all good, right? And honestly, I've had one of my employees do the same thing on my, like, advice. And the person said no, but they said no because they were, like, busy. And then they gave them a contact to call, and that person said yes. Like, nice. Most people are perfectly willing to help out somebody who genuinely wants to learn.
Yeah.
So it's important to seek out mentorship. Just ask. And if you really want to, like, hedge your bets, or if the mentor asks this of you, which is perfectly reasonable, be willing to make it worth their while a little bit, right? Like, a mentor yep. that owns a kennel and has been training dogs for X many years. Hey, can I come and learn from you? And in exchange, I'll scrub kennels for you. I'll rotate dogs for you. I'll, you know, do whatever. But if you're open to things like that, finding a mentor is more scary than it is difficult. I guarantee it.
Yeah, and also I think there people who like to teach, right? Like obviously me and Mariana, we like to teach. People that we like to teach, right? Larry Crone likes to teach. Forrest Mickey likes to teach. Dr. Hilliard likes to teach. Michael Ellis likes to teach. Tyler Mudo likes to teach. We were scared to reach out to them at some point. And now we can ask them for advice, right? By no means should you guys blow them up if you have their numbers. Don't do that. Be respectful. But the point I'm trying to make is, like, people who like to teach, it's a compliment when you ask for help. It's a compliment when you ask for advice. Like, we love that shit. That's why we do this podcast. We love it when we get messages from you guys. We love it when we get emails from you guys, because it is genuinely a compliment. And we got into this whole thing because we want to help. We want to help as much as we can. So it might be scary for you, but it's actually very welcome to people who actually enjoy teaching.
And I would say it's impressive too. Like when somebody reaches out and is like, hey, can I learn from you? Mm-hmm. Most dog trainers don't do that.
Yeah.
So from our perspective, because Brent and I have had a few, you know, like mentees that have traveled sometimes from far places. I had a guy from like Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And it's honestly impressive. You know, they're like, yeah, you know, I saw this thing you were doing, or I heard about it on the podcast or whatever. And, you know, I was hoping to like fly into town for a few days. And he's saying it in a real careful tone, as if I'm going to be like, no, you know. And I was like, that's dope. Sure. Come on over. Like, yeah. When are you free? Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's honestly, it's very impressive. It makes, at least in my case, so let me not speak for everybody, but like it makes me think really good things about you. Like, man, this person's a go-getter. They really want to learn, and they're going to make that shit happen, right? Or at the very least, give it a shot.
Yep.
So yeah, like reach out. It's all good. You're only going to make good impressions is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Right. What else? Let's see. A couple things I wanted to kind of just pinpoint to you guys that we didn't talk about in the last section. Generally, when we talk about training methods, training ideas, I think it's important that we understand there are no like original methods, right? Like there are very common processes. The tools might change, right? I might be using a toy versus food. I might be using an e-collar versus a pinch collar or a choke chain, right? The tools can shift around, but the processes of negative reinforcement, shaping with negative reinforcement, the process of shaping with positive reinforcement, the processes of punishing with both positive and negative punishment, right? All of these things, when you start understanding these things, which I would never have understood if I didn't learn the theory stuff, as you start learning more dog training methods, you start seeing, okay, this is shaping with negative reinforcement. Cool. Okay. And you start seeing these principles that exist when you shape with negative reinforcement. And then same thing with positive reinforcement or motivational work. You start seeing these principles and these underlining concepts that live across all modalities, whether you're learning from Michael Ellis School or STS Canine, or you know you're learning some other stuff from Learberg. Like you'll start seeing like, oh man, I see patterns. But here's the thing: whatever system you guys are learning from, and remember, when we say system, we mean a system has a beginning, a middle, an end. It has rules and guiding principles to it. It's very self-aware. You know, that it has down like liabilities in the system. So it actually has processes to fix those problems that are created within the system. Make sure you understand a complete system. And if you guys don't know a complete system, find someone who does know a complete system and learn the complete system so that you don't miss any, so you don't have any holes in your system of training, right? But the idea is once you have a system that you're working on, it takes roughly about 5 to 10 dogs training completely in that system for you to start to see how everything is intertwined and interconnected, right? Doesn't mean you're master of the system. Don't get me wrong, but 5 to 10 dogs, because if you get 3 easy dogs, you need to have at least 2 different dogs. I wouldn't say hard, just different. Maybe not as motivated. Maybe they need more foundational work before you can get started in your foundation, right? Like when you see multiple dogs, multiple temperaments, multiple personalities run through the same system, you start to learn how to be 2 to 3 steps ahead. You start to learn how to anticipate the dog's behavior. You start to learn that, okay, I can, the timing of when I can push, when I need to pull, right? You start learning those things. And it takes about 5 to 10 dogs. 5 to 10 dogs is the average amount of time, I would say, it takes a person to go, oh, I get why this happens. You will be a way better dog trainer on your 10th dog than on your second dog, right? And that's just common sense. But I would also do this while simultaneously recording yourself, and either you review your work or send it to a dog trainer that you guys admire, and they will adjust your work and be open to criticism. And usually it's not anything other than technique, timing, placement, you know, stuff like that. Usually it's going to be advice like, you're working too hard. Stop working so hard. Do less, right? It's like that Forgetting Sarah Marshall where he's trying to learn how to surf with Paul Rudd.
You're doing too little. Or he's you're like, doing too much. Just do less.
Yeah, do less. Pop up. Nope, you're doing too much. Pop up. Who knew? Do less. It's like that.
I love that guy.
That's most of what dog training coaching is teaching people how to be more efficient.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't want to like cuss, but I love that guy Kunu. He's like, when life gives you lemon, just say fuck the lemons and bail. I love that guy. So yes, I couldn't agree more. Just a personal practical tip on exactly that. Just logistically speaking, if you're going to record yourself and like send it to people and you know and so on, just something I've learned, make those videos like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I know your sessions are longer, but trust me, you guys, like when we talk about resistance, it's just little annoyances that get in your way that you don't even calculate for. Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever tried to take a video, text it to somebody, your phone says, I can't, it's too big of a video, and you just go fuck it and just don't send it at all? So I would say take small videos because they're quicker to upload to your cloud or your email. Mm-hmm. You're more likely then to do it. Mm-hmm. The person watching it is more likely to commit to watching a 3-minute video than like 10, 15. Mm-hmm. So just little tips like that, like make it small. You can still get it all, but record it in small snippets and send it in small snippets, right? Mm-hmm. Another tip on just how to help make things happen is make time in your work life to learn new concepts. Meaning if you're one of those trainers who's really busy with dogs and it's just train, 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 lesson, 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 make time, ideally during your like 9 to 5 hours, to sit down and learn new concepts. Lots of kennel owners that I've met that are really heavy on learning will make time, like while you're clocked in making money, for you to sit down and learn something new. Mm-hmm. Right? I've always found that to be super impressive. Mm-hmm. I try to do the same thing with my staff here. Like I'll pay hours for that. You come in and you learn these things, like cool, sit at the computer and just focus, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're not in that situation, make a little bit of time to learn new things. And the reason I keep harping on like during your work hours is because if you try to do it during your personal hours, it can get done, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's easier to fall off on that. It's easier to like commit your mind to other things on that, right? Like, oh, my Xbox is kind of right there. And it's also easier to like half focus. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I've caught myself plenty of times like, you know, playing a video game while listening to a podcast. And I'm like, I wasn't even listening for the last 30 minutes. It's just playing in my empty ears, right? So. Right. Make time during your work life. Doesn't have to be a ton of time, maybe like a few hours a week to learn on new concepts.
Yeah. And there's some variations to that. I think that's a temperament thing. Like I've being a dog trainer, I've been single a majority of the time, right? So I didn't really have any obligations to anyone unless it was a date here and there, right? So I would obsess. I would go to work. I would train dogs. I'd run into these brick walls with the dogs. And I'd be so busy training dogs that not always would I have time to research stuff, right? So when I got home, I would be so obsessed over the problems I was dealing with that dog. Then I'd get on the internet and I'd start searching, you know, a leash reactivity with this and this and that. And how do I counter condition this and blah, blah, blah. And that's where my studying would always happen. And I remember back at my peak when I was at peak learning, I would train dogs for 8 days or 8 hours a day. And then I would go home, and for at least 4 to 5 more hours, I'd be watching dog training content, right? But I think that's also my obsession, my ADHD like obsessionness. So when I have a problem, I want to help that dog so bad that I'm going to go knee deep in the research to try and figure it out. But I could only do that in my 20s. I definitely can't do that now in my 30s. I'll tell you that. So it's definitely it was a time of my life, and at that time my impulsivity that made me do that.
Yeah, it's a good point. That's a good point of like different temperaments. Like here's another one that I've done, not necessarily with dog training, but just with learning a new skill or something, is I'll make time like that month. you know, like this third weekend of October is going to be when I just sit down for 2 days and like read this thing, right? Mm-hmm. So for sure, my point just being, make sure that you're making time as opposed to trying to like fit it into when you're doing other things.
Yeah.
Sit down and make attentive time to focus on learning a new skill because it requires all of your attention. And if you don't give it all your attention, you're probably going to miss stuff, yeah. Right?
And then one thing we do as a facility, so usually those of you guys who have facilities or work for facilities, you guys know that there's high seasons and low seasons, right? You know, there's high seasons in boarding and training, and you know, there's low seasons. So typically winter time, winter break, summer break, spring break, these are going to be the busiest times for dog training, you know, for board and train. And after the new year, a lot of people get a lot of puppies. During the summer, a lot of people get a lot of puppies, right? So you're going to see there's these flows. Now, my dog trainers, one of the big things that we talk about is I'll tell them, like, hey, if we bust our butts during this summer, in the fall, during our slow season, I'm going to see if I can get someone to come out and teach us some cool shit, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the winter, if we bust our ass and really, really train really, really hard, I'm going to go see if I can pay so-and-so to come and do a seminar here so you guys can learn from them, right? And so I kind of take advantage of these slow seasons in like the flow of business to make sure that I make time for my team to learn stuff. Because if I instill anything in them, keep learning, keep mm-hmm. learning, keep working, right? The same stuff we're kind of guiding you guys through. As a facility, we really want to just make sure that this is the ethos of learning, right?
And it's a smart way to command the troops because it also keeps them very motivated to work their asses off in the summer because it'll directly benefit them in the winter, right? No, that's a brilliant concept.
Yeah.
And the final thing that I wanted to bring up myself, you know, is this is a timeline that has worked for me. If it works for you, use it. If it don't sweat about it. I've had, I guess, an issue that lots of people have had, like seminaritis. Like I just want to learn, and I wouldn't give the time to master these things, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's been there. Mm-hmm. So a rough timeline that I've adhered to as I got more mature and more experienced in training, it wasn't something that I did consciously. It just kind of factored out this way. And thinking back on it, I think it's a reasonable example. Mm. Is I would learn a new method of training. I don't mean like little nitpicks here and there because you learn those all the time, but at like a totally new system of training on average about every 2 years. And I would practice that for about 2 years, like for those 2 years. In and out, all those dogs, all those clients, getting good at explaining it in this way, seeing when it doesn't work, all that kind of stuff, right? And it's easy to try to take on the world all at once, especially with social media. So my timeline, if it works for you, go for it. Learn a system, spend 2 whole years working it before you try to deviate into something completely different. That doesn't mean don't learn while you're at it. Like I go and learn things way more often than 2 years, but I'm talking like total paradigm shifting, completely different thing. Train it for 2 whole years before you completely like try something new.
Agreed. I think that's really important. So if we were to bullet point some of this stuff. Number one, make sure that you guys are not charging for stuff that you have no clue what you're doing, right? Make sure that if you are going to be learning a new system, a new process, just make sure that you're either reviewing your own work or you have someone who can help you review your work, right? Because that's important. We're still learning. We're still students. I've been doing this 16 years. I'm still learning. I'm still students. And man, it feels good to have someone make me sharper and better. Still feels amazing, okay? Remember that, like, the fluency, it comes from physical practice, like where you don't have to think about where you're putting your hands and when you click or when you mark or whatever it is. That just comes with physical practice. You have to do it over and over and over, just like a jump shot, just like a three-pointer. You got to do it over and over and over, okay? And then the more that we research and the more we understand, you're trying to create understanding of complicated concepts so that when you're in a situation that you need to use this knowledge, you can navigate and intentionally try to drive the behavior or the result in the direction you want, right? Like that's the whole goal. Make sure, guys, if you guys are learning something new, make sure you guys train at least 5 to 10 dogs to before you even fathom trying to understand, you know, or trying to explain what you're doing, right? There's going to be a lot of things that pop up. Like, there's this concept called prediction error, right? You think something's about to work, or you predict something's going to happen, and then it doesn't happen. And that's actually when true learning happens, right? So if you're training 5 to 10 dogs in a particular system, there's going to be that one dog or two dogs or three dogs that does not follow the game plan the way you the dog is supposed to follow the game plan in the book, right? So then you have to figure out, all right, my prediction was wrong. I have to learn something new now. And then that's where you start seeing all these little like moves and these small little nuanced things. So 5 to 10 dogs minimum. And then continue to really master that method, as Mariano said, for at least 2 years. That's going to be very important.
Totally, totally. And prediction errors are a really fun concept because they have this like trickle down effect, right? Like this, you know, 9 dogs out of 10 or whatever are going to respond this way, and that becomes my prediction error, right? I'm more effective with it now. But for the 1 in 10 that don't, maybe the majority of them fall into the plan B. Like prediction errors come in these really funny little like, you know, ladders of probabilities, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to figure all those things out because that's when the learning takes place, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, I mean, I've enjoyed this very much. Yeah, sure, let's close it out.
Awesome, yeah, this was a really fun episode. We appreciate you guys for joining us on season 3, episode 3. This one's called Master Your Material. If you guys are watching us on YouTube, please make sure that you like or comment, whichever one you like. You know, do both or do one, it doesn't matter. And if you guys are listening to some of this on our podcast platforms, please leave us a review. The more reviews you guys leave, the better we show up in podcast searches. So we would really appreciate that. We love you guys, and we will see you in season 3, episode 4. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Dog Trainers Podcast, a podcast created by dog trainers, for dog trainers, or anyone who's ever fallen in love with man's best friend.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and can't wait to be back with you guys. Be sure to follow us at Dog Trainers Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And don't forget to punch the hell out of that subscribe button and leave us a review.
Remember, guys, this is your podcast. You're the best listeners in the world, and we'll see you next time.